This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Live from the Investors Bank Studio, Boomer Esiason, Greg Giannotti, Boomer and Gio on the Fan and simulcast across the country on CBS Sports Network. Good Friday morning. We've got Boomer back for this Football Friday. And Football Fridays around here these days are more morbid than anything else. Who's hurt? Who's not hurt? Who's going to get fired? Who might get traded? Who might get cut? That's the stuff we talk about with the Jets and Giants. And this morning, after some Manish Mehta reporting in the Daily News, we have another instance of dysfunction with the New York Jets, which just proves to you that when Boomer said a couple of weeks ago, will you let Todd Bowles go for the sake of him? Guy's a nice guy. You don't want to put him through the ringer here with all this stuff. Here's another example. And guess what? There's going to be another one and another one and another one from now until the end of the season in Week 17. Nobody's talking about Sam Darnold and the Bills. It's talking about the dysfunction in the organization once again. Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
You know, I'm doing pretty good there, Gio. But now, before we get to all of this other stuff, I got to ask you.
Yeah, sure.
Because you are in the power chair.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And I got a picture from you and Deontay Wilder, you know, embracing yesterday like you were long-lost brothers or something.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Al sent me the picture and said, look at this. And I'm like, oh, my God. So, you know, I asked you whether or not you thought that this next fight between he and Tyson Fury should be here in New York, and you were like all over it. Yes, 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 yes.
Oh, my goodness.
So,
yes.
Tell me, how was it? Because I was doing the interview when you guys had him on yesterday.
Oh,
I was in Indy doing the interview with Frank Reich yesterday. So
we have actually a little excerpt from the interview. Just picture that for about 20 minutes.
That was a little extreme. Yeah, I think it was awesome. It was great. Deontay Wilder, you know how big of a fan I am.
Yes, I know.
From everything that the guy represents, he's just the great. He's one of my favorite athletes. So yeah, of course I was giving him a lot of props, and it was a draw, and he didn't win. And then I begged for this fight to be in New York City. Now it's going to be tough because you know how Vegas throws the money around, but still. This is New York, and the Barclays is building.
It's got to be at the Barclays, man.
I mean, the Barclays has such a strong commitment to boxing, and this is why I think they need to really take a look at this, everybody involved. There's been a million big fights out in Vegas, right? You throw another big fight out in Vegas there, it doesn't stand alone. You want to build something really special and make this thing different, and just the electricity that New York City would have and bring to that fight, you put it at the Barclays. And for the Barclays, I mean, it's a no-brainer. I mean, you have this commitment to boxing. You're trying to make this building one of the premier boxing buildings in the world. This is the way to do it. But I just want to clarify, you know, I would hug Deontay Wilder, you know, a million times. Sure.
Yeah, but the picture that I have, he's the one. Like, you are like breastfeeding off of him.
Well, let me tell you.
It's ridiculous.
He was the one who wanted the hugs. He's the one. And Al can attest to this. Jerry can attest to this. I did not accost him and say, give me hugs. He did. He wanted the hugs, which just shows you how good of a dude he was. And he cupped multiple hugs. And then he would, like, if you see in the picture, you know, he like nestled his head into me.
I'll hold it here, but it's like you nestled your head.
Well, yeah, I mean, but look how he put his head down on my shoulder.
Al.
See that? I mean, that's really...
Greg nestled his head into his bosom. I mean, that's unbelievable.
But Al, be fair, and I know what you're...
It's wonderful. Look at that.
He was the one who wanted the hugs.
He did. He said, come in here for a hug.
Yeah, see? That's what he wanted.
Because he was responding to you.
I mean, it was like an embrace of like... like maybe somebody died in your life or something. You know, there was that kind of embrace.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I love you. I'm here for you.
Comforting.
Sure.
If you need me, I can do whatever I want for you. I mean, so I'm glad that you had your moment with him. Because I know that you're, I know that you're a huge fan.
I am, man.
Now,
I'm not going to apologize for that. I'm not. I'm a huge fan. My guy. It's American heavyweight champion. If I, you know, it's an American heavyweight champion. Who's fighting big fights that people are paying money for that we want to fight in New York City? If I don't love that guy, then I don't love anybody. That's the guy I love. And then he gives me entertainment, too, on top of that.
Well, you know what? I could see that photo in a heart right next to me and Patty Mahomes over my shoulder here.
Oh, I'll take it, man.
Yes. Okay, so anyway, so that's good. So, but I will say that, all right, Eddie, enough. If you do, and stop wearing with that Navy shirt. What's wrong with you? You're not rooting for Navy tomorrow, are you?
Pearl Harbor, sir.
Oh, that's right, Pearl Harbor Day. Okay, so thank you. Now I feel terrible.
Well, yeah, great job, Boomer.
Okay, thank you. So, but you're rooting for Army tomorrow. But here's the deal.
I am.
Yes. Okay, thank you. So, that's the power chair that you sit in.
Sure.
And we're gonna just see how powerful that chair is.
Yeah. With the Barclays,
you just gotta keep pushing it. I'm gonna try, man.
I'm gonna try, and I tell you, I mean, there is no doubt. If that fight's at the Barclays, me and you are right there and watching that thing. And that you think about all the people that are going to be flocking in that building.
It's crazy.
I mean, I think if it's in Vegas, I'm going to have to go too. But I want it right here. I mean, this is it. And like, you know, I know MGM throws the money around, whatever. Like, but like, you know, Deontay Wilder said it yesterday. He said, New York City is my second home. And this guy still got the belt. Yeah, it was a draw. Dude still got the belt.
He's like Carmelo.
Well, he's nothing like Carmelo.
Yes, he is. It's kind of like he wants to come back home and fight at his second home.
If
that's
you want
what
to
I'm
do
that,
I'm coming home. All right, fine. But don't tell
Could
me.
Could you imagine that? Like if he is walking into the stadium and he's walking into the ring and we're playing I'm Coming Home.
Oh, don't get me excited.
I mean, my God, it'd be great.
I don't know if I'd be able to contain myself. Seriously, I'd be so fired up. I mean, Jerry said he's never seen me so fired up as he did yesterday.
Al said the same thing. He goes, it was really troubling yesterday. I've never seen this side of Gio. Gio usually is, you know, pretty much kind of like a straight-laced guy when he does his interviews or he talks to an athlete or something like that. But, man, I have never seen him react to an athlete the way he reacted to Deontay Wilder.
He was doing punching motions.
Oh, yeah.
To him. Like, when you gave him the combination and he was showing – how you throw the punches.
Yeah, that's right. I was. You know, I nailed the combination. The pow-pow. And then that's what made him laugh in the control room. I said, Deontay, because we got to get to Deontay Wilder because he hit Tyson Fury with the pow-pow. And then he started laughing. And then, you know, it was great. It was awesome, man. The only thing that sucked is you weren't here.
I love the guy, too. I think if I were here, though, I think I would have interrupted whatever moment you guys
our session.
Yes.
Our session together.
Yes. But, you know, so it's interesting. You were talking about what Manish wrote and everything else. And this is exactly why I wouldn't want to put Todd Bowles through this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know how the building is over there. I don't know how they're interacting with one another. He and Mike McCagnan and everybody else probably walking on eggshells. And it's going to be a long month of December. And it's going to be a terrible Christmas for a lot of people that are going to be out of their jobs. And you got to remember, those people have families too. I mean, they'll find other jobs in other places. There's no question about that, that a lot of NFL coaches end up getting recycled anyway. So they'll all land on their feet. There's no question about it. But going through it, and I've been through this with teams and coaches, you know, I'll never forget. I was in 1994, I was going to pick up my final paycheck of the 94 season. And I'll never forget looking out the window and seeing Richie Kotite walking in the building. And I figured we hired him as a tight end coach or something because he was no longer the coach of the Philadelphia Eagles and they would not give him an extension. And then I found out literally about 2 minutes later, I got pulled into a room by one of the personnel people saying, you're not going to believe this. And I'm like, what's that? He goes, Pete Carroll was just fired and they just hired Richie Kotite. And everybody's out of the building. I'm like, what?
Yeah. It's crazy how this business works, right?
Now, that one came out of nowhere. Okay, so when it comes out of nowhere like that and hits you like a ton of bricks, I think it's just shocked everybody. This is not going to shock anybody. This is just going to be putting people through the mill. You know what I mean?
Sure, and Todd Bowles has been through it a lot more than Mike McCagnan has, and I know there have been people that have said, well, look at McCagnan's draft record, and why is everybody on Bowles, and McCagnan needs to be in the crosshairs as well. Well, you know, I really think what it comes down to is the fact that it seems like the ownership structure. And if you're telling me it's Christopher and Woody combined, of course, I'm going to believe that Woody still has a say, have decided that Mike Maccagnan's the guy that's going to take him through this next process with the picks, with another high draft pick and all the cap space, and Todd Bowles is going to go. So
we like Todd.
So the construct that we're operating under as well. That's what we think is going to happen. And yes, Mike Maccagnan has to be better than he's been if this franchise is going to get on the right track. But, you know, the thing that's interesting to me is, you know, I am from the ilk, and my man Sal Licata, who was listening to Drive It In, welcome back to the fan, Sal. You know, we share a brain on this. Is, you know, he says that the Jets need to, as we have talked about here, they need to get an experienced guy. You know, they need to another coordinator type for the Jets. And Joe screams about this, all these unproven guys that we get and it never works out. You get a proven guy. Are you telling me that Mike Maccagnan, who now notice is going to be solely on him, the pressure is going to be solely on him when Bowles is gone, the focus will be on him, he's going to hire a big personality head coach, someone who's won a Super Bowl? Let's just say Mike McCarthy's, we know he's available. Let's say Mike McCarthy and John Harbaugh are both available. Is Mike Maccagnan now going to bring in a guy like that who's going to challenge his authority when he's now going to be on the hot seat? And my answer would be no. I mean, the Manish story talks about a disconnect in the communication and how someone, he needs to hire someone that reports directly to him. John Harbaugh and Mike McCarthy aren't going to report directly to Mike Maccagnan. I'm sorry.
Well, the reason that there's a disconnect in communication is because they're in two different cylinders. You know, one is controlling the 53-man roster and reporting to the owner. The other one decides of that 53 who plays, you know, and it's hard when they both have what is presumed to be the same amount of power, right? I mean, so there are a number of ways you could do this. I don't know which way they're going to go. I just know that they're going to get a new coach. If they decide to stay with Mike, you know, Mike is just going to have to say, look, if I want to keep my job and I want to do what I'm doing, I would think that you have to explore those types of coaches like Mike McCarthy and whoever may be available come Black Monday, because this Black Monday's coming.
Yep.
And there will be guys fired. There'll be guys out there. And then they're going to have to try to find the best guy that not only is the CEO of the team, but is also somebody that can get the best out of Sam Darnold, or at least know somebody that can get the best out of Sam Darnold. That,
right.
To me, that's probably the most important aspect of all of this, just like it was to get the best out of Jared Goff, just like it was to get the best out of Carson Wentz. I mean, think about it. So Doug Peterson was a backup quarterback. Frank Reich was a backup quarterback. John DeFilippo, I believe, was a quarterback, but also was a quarterback coach for quite some time. So they had three guys that were all over Carson Wentz and Nick Foles. And their play reflected it. You know, each and every week they came out and they played well. And then they ultimately won the Super Bowl with a backup quarterback.
Yeah.
So when you think about that environment for a young quarterback, that's exactly what the Jets should try to be building. To get the most out of who is the most important person in the organization from a player standpoint, and that is their young quarterback.
Now, I don't know if Mike McCarthy would be interested in taking the Jets job, but, you know,
he'll be interested in taking any job, believe me.
But I'm saying that if he has a choice between the Browns, the Jets, and whomever else may be available at the end of the year, I don't know if he's going to prioritize the Jets over other spots, is really what I'm trying to say. But, you know, there's two schools of thought on Mike McCarthy, and one is, look at this guy's record, look at his resume, the experience that the Jets are craving and are thirsty for exists in Mike McCarthy, and there's the other side of it, which plays to your point of you need someone who's going to get the best out of Sam Darnold. Is Mike McCarthy, who was fired in part because there was a management team there that believed he wasn't getting the best out of the best quarterback in football.
Yeah,
is that the right guy?
All right, so this comes after 13 years of the same message. You know, it's almost like Parcells would go from organization to organization to organization, because he recognizes after a certain amount of time, the message stops being heated. Mm-hmm. Like, people have had enough, because and there's really only one or two guys in the history of the league that have, you know, surpassed this type of timing, and that one of them is Bill Belichick. The other one is Marvin Lewis. And Marvin Lewis, I just think, is there just because he gets along with the ownership. I can't explain it, but if you live there, you work there, you play there, or you're a fan of them, you kind of understand it. If you're not, you can't. There's no way that I can explain it to you to make you understand it.
Yeah.
But when it comes to like Mike McCarthy and the Green Bay Packers, You know, 13 years is a long, long time. And to tell you the kind of guy that he is, he asked Mark Murphy if he could come back into the building and say thank you to the staff, not the coaching staff, the entire staff of the Green Bay Packers organization. And Mark Murphy said, of course you can. So he came back in and he talked to the entire organization. Then he asked Joe Philbin if he wouldn't mind if he'd allow him to address the players. And Joe Philbin, who's the interim head coach, said, yes, I've never heard of this before. And Mike McCarthy went in there and addressed the players. I'm not sure exactly what he said, but supposedly he had received a standing ovation from the players. So these are unprecedented things that have happened with Mike McCarthy in Green Bay, which I think really truly talked to how good a guy he was and how much people loved him. But maybe, just maybe, the message was stale. And the one thing I will say, if you are Mark Murphy and you're sitting up there and you're the one that's running the team and you watch your team play listless, disinterested football against one of the worst teams in football in Lambeau in terms of
Arizona had to do Cardinals, something. Right, yeah.
It was coming to a head sooner or later. So, and then, you know, Aaron Rodgers gave you some sort of gibberish about holding people accountable and all this other stuff, trying to backpedal away from all of it. But there's no question that it came to an end, and they did him a favor, I believe, by not, you know, carrying this thing out, which maybe should have been done here in New York, because now
there's
no doubt. These are the articles that we're going to get, and it's unfortunate because a lot of people now are going to be sniping at each other off the record with the scribes, and the scribes are going to write it. Why? Because that's the story.
It's not going to end here. You think this is the last one? You know, what happens if they keep losing games? Game after game after game, the same stuff's going to happen. It's going to be worse. And then you get people who realize that they're out the door, that they have nothing to lose, and then they go run into somebody to get their side of the story. It's just, it's going to be a complete and utter fire.
And all the coaches over there right now are texting all their friends and trying to figure out where they're going to end up next year, and they're trying to line up, you know, get their ducks lined up and all that other stuff, because that's just the way it is in the NFL. They're like nomads. Like you come, sure, you stay for 4 years, and then you leave and you go somewhere else. It's just a way to the coaching profession is impossible. It is hard. It is unsettling. It's insecure. You have to live in the moment. You got to think about, you know, trying to win the next game. And then in this case, not only are you trying to beat the Bills and you want Sam Darnold to go out there and play well, but you're also thinking about where the hell's my next job. So it's just a really frustrating business, you know, and when you get to the top and you win a Super Bowl, you're the highest of highs. But then, of course, there's only one team that can do that.
Right. You might have two guys who experience those highest of highs available because them and their organizations had to make a change in McCarthy. We know he's going to be available, in John Harbaugh as well.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.